is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Merrick Kissel, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, Mr. Pompeo, now Executive Vice President Stevens Incorporated. Merrick was many years in China, in Hong Kong, with the Wall Street Journal editorial page. And I call upon her wide experience in the rise, the miracle rise of China, the mainland, and the success of Hong Kong mitigating that rise with banking and transparency. Now all history, because the headlines today point to a different China than Mary's time there. The headline from the Wall Street Journal, China power outages pose new threat to supplies of chips and other goods. Subhead, coal shortages, efforts to control energy consumption are making it harder for Chinese factories to operate. We have also the news that the turnoff or the shutdown or the restrictions of electricity to factories in 10 provinces, now followed by the rolling blackouts in residential sections of China in the Northeast, the very populated Northeast. So, Mary, a very good day to you. The puzzle here is, in recovery for the world and in China needing prosperity to recover, the bargain for many years, as I've learned, is we'll give you prosperity and growth, you give us obedience, is that the central authority in Beijing, the Chinese Communist Party, is vouchsafing the turning off of factories that don't turn off and on like light switches. It takes some time to close down and sometimes start back up again, meaning that the supply chain now has a new twist. Do you see this as a political move, as a move driven by poor central planning, as connected in some fashion to the banning of Australia coal, 98.6% decline in imports of coal from Australia, a main resource of China these last years in its growth? Good day to you, Mary.
Good day to you, John. Well, by its very nature, central planning in totalitarian systems are inherently corrupt, inefficient, inflexible. And that's what you're seeing in communist China today. In fact, we see multiple crises in the mainland. You see it not just in the energy sector. You see it also in the financial sector, where central authorities have tried to cool the property development market. And for all we know, we could see it in its politics, although that's very opaque and we don't have visibility into it. The issue really, John, is that this isn't just China's problem. This is our problem because we've outsourced so much of our supply chains and we've taken so many of our major corporations and financial institutions and tied them tightly to the fate of communist China. And so, it used to be said that when the U.S. sneezes, the world catches a cold. Well, now the same is true of China. And unfortunately, because of its inherent opacity and the inefficient allocation of resources that comes with state control, this isn't a one-off. This is a recurring issue. And it's extremely serious when the United States and Europe aren't growing and have problems of their own. So I would expect markets to pay an enormous amount of attention to what's going on in the mainland.
There are ironies in all directions. I take one. The official explanation is that the coal supplies are either limited or not adequate to the demand of electricity, which has been growing. The demand for electricity has been outgrowing the GDP growth. That is one explanation. However, at the same time, we know that China is building one coal-fired electric generating plant per week indefinitely, though it's made an announcement about building overseas. And then we have the meeting in Glasgow, if it happens in actuality or virtuality, of the United Nations called meeting of climate change, where coal is often the major focus of those concerned with fossil fuels. And we have all of this converging at the same time. I can't sort out the politics other than the fact that right now it would seem that the Chinese miracle is clumsy. Is that too simple a word for what we're seeing, Mary? All this bad timing?
Well, I take issue with the phrase Chinese miracle. No one ever asked the question, How rich and prosperous would mainland China be today had there never been a Communist Party? Wouldn't the people of China be experiencing the same kind of economic prosperity as the free people of Taiwan? We just never asked that question. I mean, I think the word that you use, John, namely, you know, political is the key word here. Xi Jinping has tried to burnish his image with commitments to renewable energy, which work great if the wind is blowing and the sun is shining, but don't really work that well otherwise. And he's cut off supplies of raw materials in a political spat with Australia because the Australians had the temerity to stand up to CCP bullying. So I think what you're seeing is interference in market mechanisms, but also admittedly, too, we should say very few people either in China or in the United States or the rest of the world anticipated just how quickly our economies would recover from the pandemic and the surge in demand for goods. And so some part of this is also due to the fact that these power plants are, you know, being and warehouses and the like are trying to churn out as many goods as they possibly can to meet that demand. That will work itself out. But the underlying political interference and political allocation of capital, that's not going to go away. And that's a problem that remains, not just there, but also in, for instance, parts of Europe, which are also seeing energy crunches due to political decisions.
The Goldman Sachs estimates is that what we're looking at, this is Dateline Shanghai via Reuters, Goldman Sachs has cut China's economic growth forecast for 2021 to 7.8% from 8.2% as energy shortages and deep industrial output cuts add, quote, significant downside pressure. That's a note to everyone in these last hours. Goldman Sachs estimated that as much as 44% of China's industrial activity has been affected, leading to a 1% point decline in annualized GDP growth. Mary, this can't help but come our way, that we're looking at now not China's recovery, but a stutter step in the worldwide recovery. I note that the virus doesn't seem to be getting a mention here from Goldman Sachs. Perhaps we've made it so much a routine that it's like commenting on the weathers. You know, you don't need to mention it if something else is going on. But
Goldman Sachs has been lips and teeth with the Chinese Communist Party since it entered mainland China in the early 1990s. They don't really have a business interest in highlighting Beijing's responsibility for the pandemic that's killed millions of people and tanked our global economy. But in terms of the knock-on effect, it's the world's second largest economy, and it's the manufacturer of many of our goods. So yes, it absolutely will have an impact. I'll give you one just anecdote, John. I went into a store here in New York to buy a new sofa, and I was told it'll take at least 6 months to get the sofa.
Right.
That's not just a production problem, of course. That's a problem with our supply chains here in the United States. But it is indicative of a lot of the shortages that we're likely to face in the coming months.
I'm told already the Christmas prices are being raised even before the shelves are empty. So all of this is knee bone, shin bone, neck bone. I go immediately to the other crisis that momentarily has moved below the fold. Business Insider, Beijing flinches from Evergrande bailout, nudges government-owned firms to snap up assets. This is a report. It says that China is not expected to directly intervene in the form of an Evergrande bailout, sources told Reuters. Mary, Evergrande is the large property developer and builder, and it seems to be an endless source of slush fund money that is now, I think the word failure is not too strong, but certainly I'll say imminent failure. Is this also evidence of clumsy management by the previously miraculous Beijing?
Well, I think investors look at Chinese companies through a different lens, and they tend to lose their common sense. Evergrande was a property developer, and that is a compelling story in China. There are a lot of, you know, ordinary Chinese who want to buy small homes because, frankly, it's one of the few places where they can store value and save. So I get that story. But Evergrande was expanding into, you know, electric cars and hospitals and financial products. and was doing everything that it could to fly as closely as possible to the higher ups in the party, including Xi Jinping. So I think professional investors for years had, some of them had looked at Evergrande and said, are they managing this expansion responsibly? Do they really know what they're doing? And on top of that, are they rubbing up against political factions internally in China that may not like the fact that the head of Evergrande was getting rich? And I think people were just piling in until the party came to an end. And unfortunately, it's come to an end. You could also, John, see this as the third stage of Xi Jinping's effort to exert total control over the political apparatus. First, he got rid of his political rivals. Secondly, he took control of the military, declared himself supreme commander. And I think this is phase three, where he's taking the most successful and richest and probably most corrupt people in China in terms of the C-suites, and he's bringing them to heel. And it's just part of that larger story. Evergrande's CEO wasn't the first, and he won't be the last.
The markets have been repeatedly treated with essays. I'm thinking of George Soros's in the Wall Street Journal, but there have been many in all directions and comments on the financial channels that China is no longer a trustworthy investment. So I asked the big question, Mary, drawing on your many years of experience, was China ever a trustworthy investment given its non-transparency?
It depends on your time frame. For some investors, if they've got a 2 to 5 year time horizon, if they could go in and make money for a short period of time, then it's the next CEO's problem. For others who got involved in strategically important sectors that touched on, for instance, capital or internet access, anything that touched a large number of people, that is also very politically perilous. And so I think it's good that the investment community is waking up and seeing the nature of the party. The risks are more obvious today. They are numerous. And the situation is likely only to get more complicated, not less.
Mary Kissel, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, Mr. Pompeo, now Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated. We turn to the red dress and the CFO executive of Huawei, Meng Wanzhou, and returning to China at the same time two Canadian nationals and more are allowed to go free from China, sometimes known as hostage diplomacy. What does this tell us about the present state of relations between China and the rest of the world, including Washington? When we come back, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.